everyone, bet responsibly. It was a tough weekend for the best sports gambler in the damn country, aka me.
I like the confidence, though.
In anticipation for my move to the border between the great states of Indiana and Kentucky, I have begun placing mock bets, as I'll call them, or practice bets.
Yeah.
Practicing bets I would place normally if I were in a state that had legalized sports betting. And just testing out to see how I would do.
Yeah.
Started out pretty good for a week or so. This week I decided to ramp it up a little bit.
Yeah.
It was MMA, it was boxing, it was NFL and college football. Well, dropped 7 units yesterday, so I will now be retiring from the practice, and I will accept no questions at this time.
It was a good run. It was a good run.
Hashtag thank you, Noah.
Let's get that started, please. I love that.
Fight announcements. We got one today, and it's a pretty big one. 5-round main event happening on February 5th. That's my mom's birthday. Shout out to her.
I love
Jack,
that.
Jack Hermanson goes up against Sean Strickland. It's going to be good to see Jack back, the Joker. We haven't seen him. It's going to be over a year at that point. While Sean Strickland is still haunting all of our nightmares after his Ariel Helwani interview. Right. So, Dominic, the question here is probably going to be, can Jack Hermanson get this fight to the ground?
Mm-hmm.
And if he can't, how long could he really withstand the kind of brawling that Sean Strickland loves to dish out? Correct.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. That's the main question in this one. Jack is, like, well-rounded, but definitely not favored on the feet in this one at all. As you always say about Sean, about the brawling, what is your technical term
Technical for him? Brawler.
Technical brawler for Sean Strickland, and that's just the ideal way to put it. He's a guy that is just going to never step off of the gas. He's going to continue to pressure, punch you in the face until you wilt under that pressure. So can Jack withstand it if he cannot get the fight to the ground? That's a great question, my friend. I'd like to say yes, but that's a very tough task. And really, this is a perfect match for both guys. Jack is still kind of on that bounce back kind of trail right now of his career. And Sean is surging the most we've ever seen right now. Someone that is just like, I don't know, just an odd, strange character, but he's finding his way here and he's approaching the elite of this division, the title contenders of this division. So a very good fight there in February, a good 5-round main event, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, the last we heard about Jack was he had that wrestling match with Hamzat that he apparently had lost. But before that, in MMA, since he lost his main event back in December of 2020, to Marvin Vettori.
Great fight.
So, you know, I think Jack Hermanson's kind of in a dangerous spot. He's kind of risking, I'm not saying necessarily a loss to Sean Strickland would be the nail in the coffin, but it's becoming more and more of a reality that Jack Hermanson just might not really be a title contender. And even though he was so good as a Bellator middleweight, and here he's just not been able to quite replicate the success. He's had some great moments for sure. He's had some nice runs, but it seems like now that he's fighting the best of the best, you know, he just can't, he just doesn't seem to have the strength or the ability to get that fight to the ground enough. And when it does stay standing, he is not a good striker. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that keeps kind of being the problem. You know, you saw the Marvin Vettori fight. That was, you know, Vettori is a good wrestler as well, but Vettori had much better stand-up than Jack Hermanson. Here against Strickland, I would give Hermanson the edge if that fight goes to the ground, but Strickland's the bigger guy. He's the stronger guy, I would say. We'll see if when they're in the cage, but I would imagine Sean Strickland would be the stronger guy in the cage. So if that's the case, how is Hermanson going to get that fight to the ground?
Right.
And if he can't, I think it's going to be a tough night for him. You know, Sean Strickland's going to be barking at him the whole time. And, you know, he's just going to be throwing a lot of powerful combinations at him. And I look forward to it, though. I wonder if five rounds will change anything. Right. Sean Strickland seems to have pretty good cardio. I can't say otherwise for Jack Hermanson. They both seem to be pretty good at going the distance. So I don't know if that'll be a factor, but at least it gives you more time for, you know, look at what Hermanson did against Kelvin Gastelum, and that was in round one.
Exactly.
You pull out those kind of submissions out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Anything else on that one?
That's all I got.
All right. What we missed, just one here. Top one. Jeff Neal, he's got a big fight coming up, UFC 269, a week from now. But he was arrested, I believe, I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, for DWI and weapon charges, Dom.
Yeah, this is tough.
Very much not something you would expect from a guy like Jeff Neal. But I don't really want to get into, like, kind of what – I don't know. We can talk about whatever we want to talk about here, but – I guess what's kind of important is that he got arrested 16 days before he's set to fight at UFC 269. Now, I don't know anything behind these charges. I don't know if this is, was this some sort of incident? Was this, you know, is Jeff Neal going through something? Or was this just simply you got caught and maybe this is something that he's done before? I mean, it's just... You put DWI and weapon charges together, man, it doesn't really paint the same kind of character that we've kind of come to know. So is there any thoughts about his upcoming fight with Ponzinibbio? Do you think we'll even get it? And where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, hopefully nothing too serious. I hope everything is okay with Jeff Neal. Hopefully there were no ill intentions or anything like that, and maybe – if he does need help, they can seek that and get that for him. He is a great fighter, an entertaining fighter, a guy that has, you know, went through a ton during 2020, nearly died due to COVID and whatnot, then bounced back. He had that fight with Stephen Thompson. That was a war. And, you know, I just hope all the best for him and that it's nothing too serious. And in terms of the fight, you know, literally 6 days from when we're recording this at this point, you know, on the broadcast on UFC Vegas 44, they still had it on there. I don't know if they're waiting for, like, the legal process to play out, which UFC typically likes to do. That's what Dana White likes to say when things like this happen in terms of issues with their fighters outside of the cage. So we'll see. I would honestly be shocked if it did happen. And then truthfully, you know, I was curious, would someone maybe come in late notice for Santiago Ponzinibbio, you know, i.e. Khamzat Chimaev or anyone else. But this is pretty close to the fight. It's a big card. It's a big opportunity. So, again, I'll be shocked if it does happen. If it does fall off, there's a plethora of options on the prelims that can bump up to the main card. But again, first and foremost, just hopefully nothing too serious with Jeff Neal.
Well said. Let's move on to the regional showcase. LFA 119 was on the ballot this week. Yes. So, Dominic, same question as always. What were your thoughts on LFA 119 and what stood out to you most?
Fun card, my friend. Two title fights, a six-fight main card. And honestly, the one that, well, there's one that's like I should say, but I'm going to hold off on that because I actually, in terms of a full, well-rounded performance, I loved what I saw from Dorian Ramos in his TKO over Isaac Thompson in round two of their fight. In that first round, it was very back and forth, tons of grappling and transitioning. But for Ramos, he was able to escape an armbar. He was able to escape, what's it called? Not a knee bar, but the with the ankle, heel hook. He was able to escape two submissions in that round, bounce back and arguably win the round with his ground and pound. Then in round two, went right back to the well, took Thompson down again. And this time it was kind of all him, had serious ground and pound. And I think they were both 2-0 in that fight. So it was interesting. I love these LFA cards where it's these guys that are debutants or they're very new to professional cards and they match them up pretty perfectly for the most part in this organization. That was one of those matchups here. And Dorian Ramos, again, just showed me that he can weather adversity, showed me a well-rounded skill set and a finishing ability. He kind of checked the boxes for me, so I got to go there with my biggest takeaway of the card.
Yeah, as the obvious one, Clayton Carpenter.
Yeah, like, I mean, let's be real here.
That's who I'm going to go with. And it's not just for the actual finish itself, but also the potential I think this guy shows. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you finish a fight in 13 seconds, that says something. But he's 5-0. He's 25 years old. All four of his five fights via finish. So, yep. I mean, this guy just shows that he could be a name to really watch out for. He comes out of the MMA lab.
Yep.
So he's got a good team behind him. Fights out of Arizona. Yeah, I thought he looked really good. I mean, obviously it's 13 seconds. You know, how much can you really...
Head kick was brutal, man.
Yeah, pull for that. This was a big card for the LFA. Two title fights were on here, but neither title fight necessarily stood out to me as like a big talking point. I will say, bantamweight title was won by Richard Palencia and the middleweight title won by Josh Silvera. Both undefeated fighters. Palencia is a bantamweight that's 31 years old, 10-0. Silvera, 7-0 now, 28 years old, middleweight. So, you know, not that neither guy can make a run. I mean, they're 31, you're like in your prime. 28, you're like just about to hit your prime. So that's usually how it's looked anyways. But I will say, typically, you know, the older aged, when you're a smaller fighter, the older your age typically hurts you more.
Yeah.
You know, you have heavyweights that fight well into their 40s. But a middleweight, so 28-year-old middleweight and Josh Silvera, I like 31-year-old bantamweight. I'm like, okay, let's see a little bit more out of him, and then maybe we can start talking about a call-up to one of these bigger promotions.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Also, shout-out Alan Jobin. Dominic reminded me he was on commentary, and that is one of my favorite fighters, and we also share a birthday, so shout-out to Alan Jobin.
I'll tell you what, he's great behind the desk for the UFC and on commentary. Woo, what a package deal.
Yeah, Bellator 272 happened Friday night. This one was a shocker, wasn't it?
I mean,
what started as one-way traffic for Kyoji Horiguchi ended in a car crash.
Been very well said. That was like poetic.
Sergio Pettis with the spinning back fist knocks out Kyoji Horiguchi in round 4, 3 minutes and 24 seconds. Dominic, we had another announcement. I don't know if I should throw this in here, but it's going to be a part of this discussion. At the beginning of the night, Bellator announced in 2022 there will be a bantamweight Grand Prix, which is what we all wanted. Everybody wanted this. The names announced: Pettis, Horiguchi, Archuleta, Rafael Stotts, Magomed Magomedov, Patchy Mix, James Gallagher, and Leandro Higo. At first, when I looked at it, I was like, as excited as I am, I'm like, three of these matchups have already happened.
Right.
This year. You know, you have the title fight happening that night, Pettis Horiguchi. We just saw Patchy Mix and James Gallagher.
Yep.
And then before that, you had Rafael Stotts and Magomed Magomedov. I'm like, maybe they should have done this sooner, was what I was kind of thinking. But once the title fight took place, Dominic, was that the best possible ending to that fight you could get to at least leave some room for questions as we move into this tournament? You know, it wasn't – if Horiguchi had just won in the fashion that he was looking like he might win, we might be like, oh, that's awesome, but, you know, hard to see anybody getting past Horiguchi. But Sergio Pettis goes into this tournament as the title holder, and while he definitely kind of hops out of the shadow, you know, he gets a highlight reel KO – there's still a lot of room for questioning on if he's really the best bantamweight in the world when he's going to have to go through three of these guys to prove it.
100%, man. This was the ideal kind of fight and ending you wanted to see going into this type of Grand Prix. Because as you said, Horiguchi, he dominated this fight for 4 rounds until the KO. I mean, he outstruck him 73-19. He was piecing him up. Even in the grappling exchanges, the few that there were, he was – winning those. Like, Horiguchi looked like he hadn't skipped a beat coming back to Bellator. Sergio Pettis had his back against the wall, but this time, you know, when we saw him with the back against the wall in the UFC, you never got to see something like this. But now, as you continue to see his evolution and his growth and how comfortable he is in that cage, to be able to pull off this spinning back fist in the fourth round, over halfway through the fourth round, was just ultra impressive. But again, you saw, okay, he's the champion. For sure, undisputed now, no ifs, ands, or buts. but there's still weaknesses here that he can work on that these other guys can potentially expose, including Horiguchi. I don't know if they announced the actual, I know they announced the eight guys, but not the actual matchups yet.
No.
So I'm very much intrigued to see how they do that, because obviously Pettis has beaten Archuleta and Horiguchi, so surely they don't give him one of those two guys in his next title defense. I'll be curious to see who that will be against. Obviously, with some of the other guys that have already fought each other, just to see more parity and them fight some of these other guys. I'm very excited for it. But yes, this fight specifically did, it's a great way to kind of really pull in interest for this Bantamweight Grand Prix. Very much eight highest level elite talents in the Bellator Bantamweight division. I'm super stoked for what Bellator has to offer in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that when you announce a Grand Prix and you already have a title fight on the same night, for obviously Pettis won fair and square. He is the clear champion. I'm not trying to say there's room to question that. I just think there is, you look at how much he got dominated for the first four rounds of this fight, you definitely have to wonder if this guy can remain the top bantamweight in the promotion when you go through a tournament like that. I mean, the pressure is on at that point. Eight guys, one of you is going to leave the champion. You have to defend your belt each round.
Right.
I mean, crazy. We could be looking at potentially Sergio could even lose round one.
Yeah.
Then you just have a new champion
it before just the tournament's back. Even over. Yeah. Right.
So very, very interesting as we move to the Grand Prix. But what would you say to the people that I saw that were saying that this was lucky, that this was a lucky shot? What would be your response to that?
Come on, guys. It's MMA, baby. Anything can happen. And this is not like he just threw the shit for giggles. Like, he saw the opening. The poor Gucci was leaning a certain way. He threw the fucking spinning back fist and it landed. What more can you say?
I mean, he threw the shit for giggles.
I mean, it was just, it was very well timed. It was very calculated. Obviously, with crazy knockouts like this, there's always a hint of luck, but I'm not going to sit here and shit on the guy. It was so impressive. And he showed just his athletic ability and his skill set. And like I already said, he continues to evolve and grow. I've never seen Sergio Pettis throw a spinning back fist before, let alone finish a fight via that. And then he knocks out Horiguchi with it to defend his title. So, yeah, man, that was just so impressive. And I want to counter back at, you know, with another question. And that's just something real simple, real subtle. Out of these eight guys in this Grand Prix, being that Pettis has already beaten two of them, who would you like his first kind of matchup in that tournament to be and subsequently his next title defense at the same time?
Magomedov.
Yeah, I do like that.
I don't know how they're going to order their I don't know if they do that. I don't know from the past, like when you look at like the light heavyweight Grand Prix that we just had, is it really like ordered by, I mean,
I don't know.
Like, outside of the fact that, like, you know, in light heavyweight, you had Nemkov and I believe Bader were on different sides of the bracket. But, I mean, I know you do that. You kind of, I'm sure they're calculating it to where it's like, okay, number eight should fight number one. Like, who?
Yeah.
So, in that case, probably Leandro Higo would be matched up with Sergio Pettis, but yeah. You know, as far as a matchup I'd be interested in, Magomedov lost to Rafael Stotts. So in that sense, like, he's a guy coming off a loss, so he's probably going to be in the back half if you're ranking these guys. And I still think the ceiling is the roof, or whatever they say. There is no roof to that ceiling.
Right, never. I agree.
To Magomedov, and I would love to see what him and Sergio can do. An interesting point here, Dominic, just back to the luck factor. I mean, Pettis faked the high kick before throwing the spinning back fist. So, I mean, it was completely calculated. It's just, I believe that was Sergio Pettis' first finish since 2014.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So, you know, amazing stuff. I remember, I think I saw Aaron Bronstetter tweeting during the fight that maybe it was after round three, because at that point it was pretty clear it was 3-0 Horiguchi. He said Pettis will need a finish, hasn't gotten one since, I don't know if it was 2014 or whatever. So basically kind of saying it's looking like he might lose this. And, you know, then you see MMA does what MMA does, and it creates that magic. And this was a, you know, it was a big moment. The fans were very much behind Sergio Pettis. Mm-hmm. I love that there in Connecticut. They kind of went crazy when won. I mean, obviously it was a highlight reel finish, but I like to see them get behind him, because regardless of where he goes from here, if he loses his belt in his next fight, whatever, I think he's earned the respect of the MMA fans that he's not just little Pettis anymore. He is Sergio
out of the
Pettis.
Shadow.
He is the best Pettis brother at this point in terms of his ability at this moment. And, you know, he's in the most interesting division in Bellator. And I think that's just going to remain true for the next few years.
Yeah, man, being that he's so young, a highlight reel finish like this, moving into now the new year with a Bantamweight Grand Prix coming up, this was a potential star-making performance for him to be one of the top guys in Bellator. Very excited to see how he fares in the Grand Prix.
Did you have a name in mind that you would like to see him face in round one?
When I immediately asked the question, I thought of who I would say if you were to counter offer me, and I thought Patchy Mix. I think that would be a very fun fight, a fresh matchup, a guy that just went to Ireland and put on such an amazing performance against James Gallagher and got the finish. That would be a very fun fight. Two super well-rounded guys. Bit of a chess match.
Yeah, I might do Patchy Mix against Horiguchi.
Dude, that's the thing, though, like a Grand Prix and when they happen, but especially this one, there's not one single matchup where you look at it and you're like, oh, yeah. That one's kind of low tier.
I know.
Every one of these matchups is sick.
I'm like saying, oh, I might put him against Horiguchi, and people at home are probably like, why?
You're right. Like,
well, I guess you can't go wrong with any matchup. So
exactly,
I guess
that's why. Dude. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see when they'll release the bracket, but it was pretty cool that they had all the guys in attendance. Each one came out and stuff. That's always cool. So
building the suspense, baby.
UFC.
Woo.
Old Reliable strikes again. Jose Aldo.
I tell you what.
When you start to count him out, he comes back and he keeps coming. Yeah. And he got it done again with the unanimous decision win, a shutout against Rob Font. Dominic, thoughts on the fight, and where does this put us currently? Where is Jose Aldo currently in this bantamweight division? I'm just going to let you roll with it. Just go.
All right, let's roll with it. So, first off, the fight, very fun, very entertaining. And I just have to say off the top that Rob Font, for what it's worth, still looked very good on the feet and then the striking. But in 4 out of 5 rounds, right when he would be looking great, the jab was landing, kind of piecing up Aldo. Boom! Jose Aldo would land the biggest shot of the round and follow it up to therefore win it. I mean, that happened literally in 4 out of 5 rounds. And in this one, we got to see the grappling of Jose Aldo, which we quite literally never, ever get to see. So it was really just a fight where we got to see what all does Jose Aldo still have? How much gas is truly left in that tank? Well, there's still quite a bit left, man, because he's looked ultra tough on the feet still. His kicks were there. The body work was there. The power that he was carrying was what impressed me the most. And I know he didn't finish Rob Font, but he was very close on numerous occasions, which says a lot to me because Rob Font's a guy that's always in tough battles. He's been in wars. So it's not necessarily easy to finish him. And the fact that Aldo almost did it multiple times was impressive. He's 35 years old. He's 31-7. He's been there, he's done that, and he's still climbing the mountain. He's still approaching another title shot. It's just so mind-boggling to me what all Jose's done in his career and is still doing, especially down at a weight class at bantamweight. I could have never envisioned that he's now on a 3-fight win streak against 3 ranked opponents. And now in terms of his standing in the elite of the division, because he's definitely amongst the elite of the division now, it's so ridiculously log-jammed and top-heavy because we've got Petr Yan as the interim champ. The undisputed champ is Aljamain Sterling. I had to be careful with my words because I almost just said Petr Yan is the champ. It feels like he is, but I digress. Those two seemingly are meant to fight. I hope soon, like maybe March of 2022 would be ideal. Then you've got TJ Dillashaw, who is a legend in his own right of the bantamweight division. And personally, I'd love to see him be matched up with Jose Aldo, assuming we get the Undisputed match kind of booked as well. I think that would be a sick fight between two legends. You still have Corey Sandhagen up there. I feel like I'm forgetting a name. Who else am I forgetting?
Well, Rob Font was in the top of the
heat. Rob Font, obviously. Maybe I did say everybody then. But regardless, this division is just so insane. It's one of the best in the world. And again, the fact that
another name, Merab Dvalishvili.
Thank you. He's now amongst there. Yes, there. I knew I was forgetting another name that's a player, and he's there too. So this division's so sick, man, and the fact that Aldo's still there is so amazing. The outgoing support that was on Twitter and everything was so awesome. And yeah, just really an amazing performance. One that I thought on Friday, you can go back on record of me saying it. That's kind of the problem with this podcast, is that as the fight went on, I thought Rob Font was going to get the best of it. Jose held strong, looked the best we've seen in rounds 4 and 5, and was able to get the decision victory, man. So quite a performance. I rambled a lot, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on Jose as well.
I'm not surprised, motherfuckers. Okay. Jose Aldo did what I thought Jose Aldo was going to do here. Now, I didn't expect this to be like a one-sided. I mean, I guess calling it one-sided doesn't really do Rob Font justice here.
Right.
In a way, I mean, it was fine. I didn't expect like a sweep of the cards, you know.
Yeah.
Which I guess it wasn't, because one judge did give one round to Rob Font. But in a sense, the majority online opinion was that this was a 5-0 win for Aldo.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that, but I did expect Jose Aldo to put up a really good performance here. I will even say he did get tired at times, but overall he held up pretty well.
Yeah, for sure.
And when he would get tired, he was doing such a good job of landing damaging blows on Rob Font. That was the thing. Rob Font couldn't seem to handle the power that Aldo had in his punches. So anytime Aldo even had his back against the ropes, you know, round one was a prime example.
Yeah.
And Rob Font was controlling, winning that round very handedly. And then within the last 15 seconds, he nearly gets finished.
Yeah.
So then the point goes to Aldo, because, I mean, it's all about damage, right?
Exactly.
So, that was kind of the story of this fight. So much so, Dominic, that I'm going to try to word this properly. This was this fight had the second biggest striking deficiency for the winner.
I thought it was going to be something like that.
Okay, Jose Aldo landed, I forget how many less significant strikes than Rob Font.
Yeah.
But one, it was the second most in that situation in UFC history.
If I had to guess, I haven't seen the numbers, but I would guess Rob Font nearly doubled him up. I would say it was close to that.
I think it was somewhere around, I mean, you're pretty close to that. I'm pretty sure Aldo was around the 90. Mm-hmm. And, Rob Font might have been around 170. I could be wrong about that. Also could have been who got number one, a fight that is very good. Title fight back in 2016, Robbie Lawler winning over Carlos Condit.
Oh, look at that.
Which is a fight that a lot of people think Carlos Condit won.
Yeah. Yet
here we go. Not a single person crying foul that Rob Font lost here. So very interesting, and just shows my big argument. I hate when people use striking numbers as a means to prove that they're right, that a fighter won. To be clear, striking numbers, these stats don't tell the whole story. It's about damage at the end of the day. You got to watch the fight. You got to see who's landing the more damaging blows. This fight, prime example of that.
Because
if you looked up the stats, you might just assume that Rob Font dominated this fight. Not the case. But I agree. Jose Aldo, TJ Dillashaw, you got to book that fight. I know TJ's – I already know how this is going to go. TJ's going to piss some people off because he's going to believe that he should just be able to hold out
for
the winner of Sterling and Jan. Don't blame him for feeling that way. Don't blame him for trying to do it. But you know how this is going to go, Dominic. He's going to say it, and people on Twitter are going to say, oh, he's ducking Aldo. He's doing this. Because people on Twitter are stupid.
to put it kindly.
No, they're stupid.
Oh, okay. But I just thought you had more harsh words. Is all.
People fall in. People just. I'm not going to rant, but people fall like I don't understand. People get so mad about statements like that, but like, you know, let's say Dillashaw does come out and just say like, "No, I'm waiting for the winner." You know, Aldo can fight Merab or something, and
yeah,
I'll get the winner, and then we can go from there. People are going to get so mad, but like, obviously the guy wants a title shot. Like, why would he not
right
for that?
Yeah,
it's like, what would you do if you're in that situation? You fucking idiot! Like, just people just, I don't know. They don't really see behind the curtains, you know, like
right
we do. But I digress. Great fight. Maybe should have been fight of the night. It wasn't actually my fight of the night either. So don't yell at me. But
yeah,
I thought it was better than the fight that did get fight of the night. So I guess there's
that. I agree. Yeah.
Let's get on to the next one. Sweet Dreams. That's hey. What that was for Jimmy Crew. Does this fight didn't see this one coming? Jamal Hill knocks out Jimmy Crew in 48 seconds. Dropped him twice in that 48 seconds as well. Dominic, we kind of viewed these two guys as the two biggest prospects or up-and-comers, maybe is the better word, of this light heavyweight division.
Yeah.
Almost viewing them on equal playing field. After seeing this fight, how surprised are you, and what does this mean for both guys moving forward?
Well, obviously, this is the biggest win of Jamal Hill's career. I never would have thought he was going to put Jimmy Crew out like this. It was vicious. He looked fast. He looked powerful, precise. We know that Jamal Hill is a great striker, but I thought this was going to be a dogfight. I really thought it was going to be back and forth. Jimmy Crew seemingly didn't really even do much. I mean, again, it's only 48 seconds, so what can you do in that amount of time anyway? It is a very tough loss for Jimmy Crew. We kind of said on Friday that this is one of those matchups where it's two prospects. They're right there at the tail end of the rankings. Whoever wins, the UFC is going to grab a hold of and ride them as long as they can in this division. And the loser, they might just mingle around, might just kind of stay stagnant. And now that I look back on it, I'm like, well, shit, Jimmy Crew lost. But he's still good. Like, I believe in his potential, and I don't think
when we both thinking Jimmy Crew was going to win this fight?
We must have been, man. Because I don't know, like,
definitely thinking he was going to win.
Do we essentially maybe, and this is no slight to Jamal Hill, but he is the older guy, and Jimmy Crew's younger, and I just feel maybe there's still, in terms of long-term, a higher ceiling. Maybe that's just where I'm thinking with this. So I still think Jimmy Crew can make a name, but let's just kind of chill out with him now because he's had some very tough fights against a lot of ranked opponents, but now he's lost two in a row. They launched him in there with Anthony Smith. It didn't go well. And then right here, they kind of give him a guy on equal playing field, and he gets knocked out even more brutally, loses in a more convincing fashion. But Jamal Hill, Sweet Dreams is right. Ultra impressive. He's now finished five of his wins via KO, TKO. I'm ready. I'm grabbing a hold of it. He's long. He's rangy. He's a great striker. He can go the distance if he has to. Let's get him right in there with the top 10 guy, man, because this was an impressive performance. What can you say about it?
So, yeah, this was a big shock. Jamal Hill, as great as he is and as much as I've really enjoyed watching him, you know, I think that Paul Craig loss was was pretty eye-opening, I guess, for me. Like, just the deficiencies on the ground that seemed to be there. Mm-hmm. Not that he necessarily looked bad. He just got out. He got out-leveled in that fight when it came to the groundwork. Just seemed lost. Did not seem fast in that sense. Like, he looked like he just didn't know what to do. Like, he just, you know, Paul Craig's just, like, throwing up his fucking legs a million miles a minute.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's like, I don't know what's going on. Here, he was in his realm. In being able to strike at will, and he does have much faster hands than Jimmy Crew. He has better hands than Jimmy Crew, as we see. But I did think Jimmy Crew's wrestling could be a factor here. I thought maybe as this fight went on, he'd be able to get this fight down, maybe even get a submission win. We didn't see it long enough to really know if that would have been a factor or if Jamal Hill's takedown defense could have been, secure, but a huge win for Jamal Hill to get back on track. And how can you deny this guy a top 10 opponent next? I mean,
oh man,
with a performance like that, you got to give this guy top 10 next and really let him go and prove it again against, you know, I don't know who you put this guy up against, but, you know, I think there's some great names around that back half of the top 10 that could really test him. Even if you want to find him someone who can test him on the ground a little bit, I would be all for that. What I think is tough here, Dominic, is I'm actually starting to think that there might be a true ceiling to Jimmy Crute. You know, I've been really high on him for a long time. But let's be clear. He's been given three opponents who were top 15 when he fought them, and he has lost all three times. Misha Cirkunov, Anthony Smith, and now Jamal Hill. He does have a win over Paul Craig, but that was before Paul Craig was a ranked fighter. Right. So it just seems that when Jimmy Crute is fighting the top-level competition, and this is in a light heavyweight division that is not exactly looked at as one of the most stacked, talent-stacked divisions, but still great fighters. I'm not going to doubt that or deny that. He just can't really get it done. And, you know, right. The Anthony Smith fight, it's like, okay, his leg goes fucking dead. Like, I mean, how could you say that he got outclassed or outworked? But he was getting kind of outworked in that fight,
yes,
with the jab of Anthony Smith and whatnot. You know, it's a tough loss. I'm not giving up on Jimmy Crute. I think he's still got a lot of potential. He's still very young. But I do think he needs a big step back. Like, take him out of the rankings.
Yeah.
Step back. Until he can be a top 15 fighter, he should not be a top 15 fighter.
Right.
That's just what it's telling me right now. So Jamal Hill, as much as I thought going in that these guys were kind of like on equal playing field, I think this showed Jamal Hill is a lot better right now than Jimmy Crute. And I don't know how much better Jamal Hill is in terms of his ranking. Like, I don't know if he's really a top 10 light heavyweight. Truthfully, I'd like to think so, but I don't know that. I just think right now that shows that Jimmy Crute is just not a top 15 light heavyweight.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I agree.
Moving on from there, let's get into the rest. We had a lot of fights to talk about. Co-main event, Bellator 272. Jeremy Kennedy got a unanimous decision win, the biggest win of his career over Emmanuel Sanchez. What does this mean for Jeremy Kennedy, Dominic, but also for Emmanuel Sanchez? That's three losses in a row.
Yeah, man. So for Jeremy Kennedy, it wasn't like the most ultra impressive performance, but it was one that he won convincingly all throughout. Got the decision win, utilized a lot of grappling, looked all right on the feet as well. He did beat a tough guy that's been in there with Pitbull twice. He's fought for, you know, in that Grand Prix and whatnot. So it was a big win. Jeremy Kennedy was ranked 9th. So he does kind of launch himself in. But I came in on Friday thinking if he can come out and really make a statement against Sanchez, he could maybe get a title shot because of kind of what the top of this division looks like with the kind of the newer things going on. But now, nah. It was a big win. Don't get me wrong. He's going to be in that top 5 now area, but he's going to need one or two more before he can really convince me otherwise. Depending on the performances that he has. And for Sanchez, that's three straight losses now. But it's all against kind of the best guys in this division, top 10 level fighters. So, you know, back to the drawing board for Emmanuel Sanchez. He's still relatively young. He's 12-7 in Bellator, or 12-6. So 20-7 overall, something like that. So still a guy that has some talent. I just don't know if we ever see him kind of back in with the top of this division any longer.
That's probably a good way to put it. He's only 31 years old. That's what's so crazy is that, you know, it seems like his peak came almost too early, or this division's just gotten a lot better while he's been getting better, but it's like caught up to him at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but, you know, it's just it's a bit of a deflating loss because this wasn't a very exciting fight.
Yeah.
And he kind of just lost clearly all three rounds of the fight. So, you know, it almost is worse than getting like knocked out quickly. It's just like, well, you got kind of outclassed for the whole 15 minutes. And it doesn't leave us with, it doesn't leave me like really knowing what to do with Emmanuel Sanchez, but he's obviously going to be a tough fight for anybody. So you probably put him into somewhat of a gatekeeper role at this point.
Yep.
Really see, test him against your up and comers. I mean, that's kind of what they did here with Jeremy Kennedy. And I think even though it wasn't the most exciting fight, I do think Jeremy Kennedy is going to have a big fight in his future to maybe for him to really prove that he's a title challenger. But yeah, overall, pretty underwhelming fight, but you know, I guess there was a statement made.
Precisely.
Low on the prelims, one of the biggest comebacks of the year, our man Spike Carlisle gets the submission win over Dan Moret in round 3, 2 minutes, 58 seconds. Are you even surprised, Dominic, that this fight went this way?
I'm telling you right now, Noah, Spike Carlisle has officially surpassed Spike Dudley on the level of toughness list for sports entertainment and combat. Spike Carlisle, man, the UFC veteran, he's been in Cage Warriors, now in Bellator. They put him on the second fight of the card. What are we doing, Bellator? But, man, he was getting beat up bad in this one. And to come back the way he did and not only win, but get the submission victory was so impressive, man. I love this guy, Spike Carlisle, with the crazy hair, the charisma, the attitude. Just what a great performance. What a comeback. A night filled with comebacks on this Bellator card. And this one, man, to start the night off was just so awesome. What'd you think of old Spike?
I was just happy to see him get that win. And, of course, it had to be in, like, it couldn't just be that he gets a win. Right. He had to be, you know, he had to be losing the fight. All hope is lost. And then he has this big comeback. Such a Spike Carlisle move right there. The guy always has to be in these memorable, exciting fights. He can't just have a win. Like, just take a day. Just take a fight, Spike, where you just
chill out.
Take no damage. Just, you know, put on a complete performance. Hell no. This guy's like, let me have my back against the wall. Let me have my face brutalized, and then maybe I'll submit you. I don't know.
Yeah. He says, let me bang, bro.
Yeah. UFC, back to them. We go to the co-main event as Rafael Fiziev in the Battle of Strikers wins via TKO over Brad Riddell. Round 3, 2 minutes, 20 seconds. You know, this one was a little bit surprising. I did favor Fiziev very slightly.
Yeah.
But I was surprised. It wasn't one-sided by any means. This was back and forth, but in the sense of it felt like Fiziev had the upper hand for most of the fight. And then for him to get the finish, I was very surprised about. And I really, the way I saw this fight going was I actually saw Fiziev kind of, he has shown a worse gas tank than Brad Riddell. So I thought Riddell would get better as the fight went on, but that really didn't seem to be the case. It kind of seemed like Fiziev did a much better job this time of managing his cardio. Mm-hmm. And you know, he got deadlier as the fight went on, clearly, as he gets a third round finish. And the way he switched the stance and immediately threw that heel kick, and I mean,
perfect.
You could tell Riddell was just like out on his feet. Great stoppage by Herb Dean.
Yes.
Everybody wants to shit on Herb Dean. Well, here, you know, give the guy credit when it's due. That was a great stoppage by him. Well, what'd you think here? And, you know, do you feel like we got this fight a little too early? Should they have waited a little bit on this one?
See, no, that's the problem. We discuss this all the time with when these kind of like prospects battle out one on one. And, you know, it's a fight that I could see potentially happening again in the future. I still believe in Brad Riddell, an amazing kickboxer, but Rafael Fiziev takes the cake, man. And the way that he was able to kind of withstand from getting into a full-fledged firefight, kind of like how he did with Bobby Green, showed a lot in terms of like how much he's growing fight by fight. And then to, like you said, he made that so perfect when he switched that stance. Bam! He knew exactly what he was going to do because Riddell was moving in that direction. It was so beautiful. An amazing TKO that got him a performance of the night bonus. And it's just, you know, again, he gets kind of that first ranked fighter win as well. Took out number 12. I'm curious to see how the UFC will kind of move him forward. Top 10 could be next. I have a name in mind, but I don't want to necessarily. Should I say it, Noah? Should I say a name?
Yeah, say it.
What's Gregor Gillespie up to? Because I know, that's why I didn't want to say it.
How many times?
You were gonna hate
how many times?
I know.
How many times
I know.
Are you going to tell my man Gregor to fight backwards.
I know.
This guy puts on a clinic in his last fight, a grappling clinic. And you go, oh, welcome a guy into the top 15 as your next fight. You know, that just shows you are so biased against Gregor Gillespie. It is unreal. You want him to fight Kevin Lee? You want him to fight Kevin Lee again? Is that what you want? Of course you would.
Listen, guys, all I'm saying is I'm not ready to necessarily just throw Fazaev into like the title contenders. Gregor's just kind of chilling, ain't got nothing scheduled. And you know, everybody else in front of me is booked, but he's not ready to take on like a top four. So why not give him a guy with a lot of hype, a lot of momentum? Rafael Fazaev, I think it's a fun fight. I knew you'd hate it, Noah. Maybe that's just why I wanted to say it. But anyway, Rafael Fazaev, again, amazing performance. To get the finish like that was crazy. And then to reiterate again, was it too early? I'm going to still say no, just because we may see it again. And if we don't, we may just know who the better guy was anyway.
If we do see it again, I can't imagine it's going to be a worse fight. So no. That's something to look forward to. This actually was my fight of the night. But I will admit, Gregor Gillespie is kind of a great matchup to test Fazaev in like the grappling department. But I still hate it because you're just shitting on Gregor Gillespie and what that man did in his last fight. But, you know, Dominic being biased against the grapplers, who would have thought, you know?
Gregor, if you're listening, just know Noah sits on a throne of lies.
We did have a huge comeback, though, on this card.
What a weekend for comeback.
Clay Guida said, I'm tired of being snubbed by the below-average Joe, so I'm just going to have to go out there and put on this kind of performance so that they'll talk about me.
Yeah.
He gets the come-from-behind submission win over Leonardo Santos, round two, a minute 21 in. This is something me and Dominic have talked about behind the scenes. Like when we're setting which fights we're going to talk about for the previews and for the recaps, there's been a couple times where I've been like, Dominic, should we talk about Clay Guida? Because it's right. Like, we're not really, it's like, you know, Clay Guida is, the term legend gets thrown around a lot. I don't know if he's not necessarily a legend, but he like is in a sense. He's a legendary fighter. He has a lot of history, you know, in the company. He's always been a fan favorite. That's probably a better way of putting it. But he's never really, you know, been that. I mean, even less so than, like, we talked about Jim Miller.
Yeah.
He's even less than Jim Miller. And Jim Miller's a guy who's never fought for a title, never won a title. But Clay Guida is great. But obviously, at his age, he's not fighting at, like, the highest level. So we've always been kind of like, we won't really, unless he puts on a good performance or unless there's like a really good finish or something, we probably won't talk about it. Well, here you go. So early in this fight, Dominic, I mean, Santos, this fight was about as close to being finished as you could have.
Yeah.
I mean, Santos, I think the striking differential is 46-0 unofficially.
Yeah, it was.
Santos, like, you could tell that guy was like, what do I got to do to put this guy away? Because he hurt him to the body. And then, you know, because Clay Guida's body was so hurt, he was trying to block it when Santos got the tie clinch. Instead goes to the head. Mouthpiece comes out. Looks like a flash KO'd him. I thought for sure it was done. But it wasn't. So Santos essentially punches himself out to the point where he is literally gassed.
Yes.
With a minute left in round one, I can't think of a bigger horror movie. Like, that's the perfect horror movie, like, plot. Is you're a fighter who just gassed with a minute left in round one.
Yeah.
And you're fighting Clay Guida.
That's a nightmare. And
Guida comes back strong at the end of round one, takes him down, but obviously still loses the round. But round two, you could tell immediately. The way he shoots out, he looked fully recovered. Santos looking like the man who's worse for wear. And Clay Guida ends up getting a submission win. The odds on that, I believe a second round submission win for Clay Guida was 43-1. That's pretty insurmountable, people.
Yeah.
So a huge win for Clay Guida. The combined age in this fight was 80 years old. So neither guy necessarily, necessarily going to be looking at title shots, but a big win in the fabled career of Clay Guida.
I can't even add any more onto it, Noah. Let me give a little. I remember being a wee lad getting into the UFC, and this crazy son of a bitch with wild hair was always getting into barn burners, and he's still doing it 15, 16 years later. Just unbelievable, man. And the fact that he came back was ultra impressive. So shout out to Clay the Carpenter Guida.
Chris Curtis, he's making a case for newcomer of the year right before our eyes as he gets the TKO of Brendan Allen, 1:58 of round two. Was this one surprising to you, Dominic? Or, you know, by this point, have you already stopped sleeping on Chris Curtis?
Yeah, I definitely wasn't sleeping on Chris Curtis. I love this guy. Helps that he's from Ohio. But I thought this was going to be a really tough fight and one that I was leaning toward Brendan Allen because I just, at the stage of their careers, I believe Brendan Allen has the higher ceiling and just a more well-rounded skill set. You know, being that Chris Curtis is 34, he's had like 36 fights now. He's been there and done that. And he recognizes, as Noah's already said on Friday and before that even, that he knows time is of the essence, essentially. He knows he may or may not get a title shot, but he's here for a fun ride. He doesn't care who he fights. Shit, he took this just a month after he was in a barn burner with Phil Halls that he was also losing and had to come back and win. So this was such an incredible performance, and I know that he had that power. And Brendan Allen has been hit and hurt before, so I knew it was a possibility, and I loved watching everything about this. Chris Curtis, we got to see more of him, kind of see more of his skill set and how he was able to counteract kind of some of the strategies Brendan Allen was wanting to utilize, and to be able to get that finish was so impressive. His power, man, is dangerous in this middleweight division. And obviously there's a ton of guys that can get KOs, but for someone like this in the back half that's not even ranked, coming in, kind of creeping in the shadows, this dude is a legit threat to some of these guys in the back half of the rankings.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And, you know, these are back-to-back wins on short notice against some of the bigger up-and-comers of this division. I mean, These aren't just like no-name wins. I mean, beating Brendan Allen and Phil Halls on back-to-back fights, that's very impressive because both guys haven't lost very much. Well, Phil Halls, that was his first loss in the UFC.
Yeah.
Brendan Allen, that's his second. And his only other one was to Sean Strickland. So if that tells you anything about what kind of competition he's fighting, this is very impressive. I mean, I was more leaning towards Brendan Allen because I'm like, he can't do this a second time, right? Like, Brendan Allen's going to be aware, like, this guy is for real. He's not going to take him lightly, which I don't think he did.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you know, Brendan Allen's too talented to lose this fight. But man, Chris Curtis, when he hurts you on the feet, does such a great job of like he both pounces on you but also picks his shots very carefully. It's like,
yeah,
it's so bizarre. It's like the pressure's on, but he's also carefully placing where he's throwing shots, right to the liver, right to the temple, right to the back of the ear, whatever. He is very calculated in how he delivers his blows, but he also keeps the pressure on. It's very, I would say it shows it how much of a veteran he is, that he's picked that up over his time. And there's no doubt this guy should be fighting top 15 next, and he should get a full training camp to do it, correct?
100%. 100 million percent. But for what it's worth, I do just want to throw this out there because, shit, we talked about it at the top of the episode. Chris Curtis came on the mic in the post-fight presser and said, hey, anybody need a fight next week at UFC 269? Well, I can't help but think that there's a welterweight that may still want to stay on the card in Santiago Ponzinibbio. I'm just saying when you look into it is all. But, hey, Chris Curtis, OHIO, baby.
Could he make that weight?
No, I'm saying a catch weight.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or Ponzinibbio takes it at 185. It probably won't happen, but that's what clicked into my head.
Okay. I was about to say, I was like, Chris Curtis is a big guy for middleweight. But no, that would I wouldn't be opposed to it, but I think that's a tough fight for Ponzinibbio.
Yeah, yeah.
after that, we finally got to see excuse me, the performance. Had to clear my throat.
Cleared out.
We finally saw the performance we needed to see from Manel Cape as he gets the TKO in round one over Zalgas Dzhumagulov. I told you this, Dominic, after the fight was over. 2022 will be Manel Cape's year. I don't know if he's going to win a title, but after this performance, I said, finally, Starboy has arrived into the UFC. And I think he's going to be doing some damage to the top 15 of this flyweight division come 2022.
Yeah, 100%. We've been waiting on it, right? We've talked about it from the day he signed with the UFC and to now. And the fact that he's so active is very impressive to me as well. This is already his fourth fight in UFC. He started 0-2. Now he's 2-2. Two back-to-back KO, TKO finishes. But that first one was plagued in controversy because he missed weight. As Noah said, this was finally the one. He made the weight. There was no shit. And he looked amazing the whole fight. His combination up against the fence, I'd love to know how many punches were involved. It had to be 25, 30 punches. It was nonstop. And he's ready. Let's launch him in here. We know that he's a top 15 talent. He just doesn't have a number next to his name. So I'm very much looking forward to what the UFC is going to test him with next. He's very active. I think we're going to see him 3-4 more times in 2022. And by the end of the year, he said he's going to be the champion. And Noah, if he keeps having performances like this, it may not be long before he's at least challenging whoever the champion may be.
Yeah, the only drawback, the only holdback I'm going to have on him is that that one time he missed weight, is that going to be a concern moving forward? Is he always going to be cutting it close?
Right.
You know, is this a Davison situation where it's like we're on borrowed time for how long Manel Cape can really stay at flyweight? I hope that's not the case because he looked terrific here. And I want to see how far he can take that kind of performance and hopefully, you know, follow that up in a big way. But something just to watch out for anybody that, you know, as much as I want to be like fully on his train, there is that added factor of like,
right, you know,
he did miss weight in his last fight. So not an easy weight class to make for sure, 125 pounds. But that's going to wrap it up here for the MMA weekend recap. Give us your thoughts on these fights and anything you want to see next from all these guys. You can do that by leaving a voice message or let us know in the comments below. We'll be back on Friday
with
a preview, a big one, UFC 269. The card to end all cards, the card to take us into 2022. It's happening Saturday night. So make sure to be here for that preview. But until then, Dominic, tell the good people where they can find you on social media.
You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, at DSLEE14. More importantly, go follow, go engage, go interact with the podcast on Twitter, on Instagram, at BAJ_MMA podcast.
For me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at NTBaker_. If you go to the link in my bio, it will take you to the link tree, which will present you with a list of links to all the platforms the podcast is on, along with social media platforms. So that includes, but it's not limited to.
Yeah.
Oh, you thought.
And we're out of here.
you thought I was going to pass you the mic, didn't you, boy? How about you sit back and let me send this thing out, all right? There you go. Yeah. But so it includes, but it's not limited to, the Twitter, the Instagram, the YouTube channel, and Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. It's all on there. And there's a couple links for today's sponsor, Anchor. There you go. Be careful with those hands in the camera, my friend.
I can't do anything.
I don't remember where I was at, but
you're talking about Anchor.
Anchor, first, leaving a voice message. Do it, people.
Please.
Leave a voice message. And there's a second link on there if you want to become a supporter of the podcast. That just provides with a few dollars a month. All that money goes back into improving the quality of the podcast. But that's it. We're out. And we'll see y'all on Friday.
See you guys.